Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. Please go to the website foundation@hearstcastle.com to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
Tom Wilmer, reporting from Bristol, Virginia.
Hi, I'm Ross Jones, and I'm the editor of Holler.
And I'm Kira Baines, and I am the assistant editor of Holler, and we're based in London. But we're here today in Bristol at Bristol River Mem Roots Reunion Festival.
In Tennessee and Virginia.
In Tennessee and Virginia, yeah, crossing the state lines.
It's an interesting one for us, that's for sure.
Yeah. It really is. There's no other town that I know of like that. Main Street, middle of the road, is a state line.
It's unique. I can't think of a festival where we have that, like an outside setting across the street. Like, they close off all the roads. And then just the views, it's just so unique. Such an incredible sight.
The thing that I find crazy is how you can have one foot in Virginia and one foot in Tennessee. And yet this festival is, you can cross the road from one venue to another, one bar to another, and it's all the same thing, which for people from England is just not something we'd ever have in our experience.
Interesting. Back to you guys and Holler magazine. Mm-hmm. What is it? How did it start? And what is the mission statement?
Sure. So Holler started in 2020. Our esteemed directors, they were working on festival apps for across the UK, and they worked on the C2C festival, and they found that there was more of a passion and engagement with country music more than any other genre.
In the UK?
In the UK, wow. Particularly. And so they thought, well, let's make the most of this. Let's create a magazine and speak to an audience that's already engaged in terms of an older demographic, but also speak to millennials, Gen Z, really cover all bases across the globe.
And it's a digital publication.
That's
right. There's no print edition.
There's no print at this stage. Mm-hmm. Watch this space. But currently, just digital, written form. We work on features, reviews, interviews. And we just want to chat about everything that's country, Americana, and roots, particularly the things that don't get as much coverage as it usually does. We obviously cover commercial country, and we do it in an opinionated and a critical way. And I don't think you see that much, in many places these days. But we also really want to ensure that it's diverse, it's inclusive. You know, we want to cover artists that don't get the sort of coverage that others do, and they obviously deserve it because there are so many incredible artists out there.
It's plausible that print is dead as far as the magazine. You know, there are so many advantages to digital. For example, one is if there's a typo or if there's an update or a change, you can modify your digital edition 24 hours a day.
Exactly.
But if you got a print editions out there, you're stuck.
It's difficult. We've had some experiences of this in terms of comparing yourself as a digital outlet to a print outlet. When things happen, controversial things, events that really you need to have a particular stance on. When you're digital, you, like you said, you can go back and change things, and you can almost edit your voice in a way. But when you're in print, once that's out and you can't change it, and you almost have to stick, well, you have to stick to what's been said until the next time you can comment on it. And that kind of poses an interesting kind of debate in a way as to whether you should be able to change something that's already been published, because if digital weren't a thing, you wouldn't be able to. From like a journalistic point of view and your integrity to your word and what you've already said and reported on, should you be able to change something that easily? I don't know, it's an interesting thing.
All I can say, it's a lucky thing we can.
Yeah, it is lucky. I mean, you know, so much changes so fast and events that happen that you need, obviously you will have an opinion on.
And then there's also that kind of unspoken byproduct, and that has to do with environmental issues, with green issues. If you have a physical printed edition, it has to be loaded onto a truck or onto an airplane and blah, blah, blah. And so you have that whole footprint of environmental issues that are streamlined by going digital.
That's it. It's so true. And I think it's something we've considered in the sense of, say we did do a run, it would most likely be a limited one. And so what is our impact on that? And is it justifiable? And so that's like moving, if we did end up moving into that sort of field, that has to be taken into account. If we're just doing a limited, quite boutique run, can we justify that?
I think it would be interesting to do that in a green way as possible, like, you know, all recycled materials are all kind of eco-conscious, so that your carbon footprint is totally neutral. That'd be a really interesting way to, an important way to do it as well, I think.
I think that would represent Holler's values quite more than anything.
Yeah.
Be quite important.
Well, I think the other byproduct or benefit of digital is you're nimble and your overhead costs are less. Therefore, the cost to subscribe, to follow the publication, you can have a lower price point and still be a profitable enterprise.
It's very true. Yeah. It's very true. And it's the way, I mean, obviously we see it globally, but I think particularly in the UK, we're seeing it very much so. The paywalls, the subscription methods are becoming the main route of revenue with, obviously, I mean, the pandemic really played its part on essentially disabling advertising revenue. There were no festivals to promote, there were no albums to share, there was no money to put behind them in marketing budgets. And so the publications have either died or had to find subscription models and offer increasingly unique and interesting product to offer them.
It's a shame though, because all these new things all these things we have to consider environmentally in everything we've been speaking about in terms of money and how things can, companies and print magazines can sustain themselves, is that less and less do we get that opportunity to find something physical
I was just going
and
there
keep
that
it, you
that
know?
That tangible tactile
special.
Whether it's a book or a magazine
that's it.
I think I love to have physical copies of books.
Me too.
Because you know when you've read something and you close the pages and you're like, whoa, that is really, it's going to stick with me. And then you can keep it. Yeah. I'm quite a sentimental person, so I guess that means a lot to me. But it's the same with any kind of print magazines that I've had, and there's been an article or something in it that has spoken to me, or pictures or something. And it's like a way to document time, things you've discovered.
And I think part of it is unconscious or subconscious. I try to do my own analytics. There's something about how your eye views a page is different on a screen than it is on a piece of paper.
100%.
It really does.
I feel like actually thinking about it in that question and what you were saying, I feel like I'm so much more like lost in what I'm reading in a paper than on a screen. I'm still quite aware when I'm like reading, say, The Guardian or something.
It's because you've got an advert flashing at you on the side and whatever notifications popping up all at the same time. You're not just with that, what your eyes can see on a page, you're with all these other things that you can see and that are interfering with that experience as well.
You lose the sense of escape.
Yeah, interesting. Let's dig deeper on the whole thematic purpose of your publication.
Okay.
And that's basically what, American roots music?
Yeah.
But that being said, as I know you guys well know, that American roots music exists because of the Irish and the Scottish and the Scots-Irish who immigrated here.
Yeah.
You know, and they brought with them their storytelling, their instruments, and their music. It follows that you have to have had an ongoing rediscovery of the old world, going to Scotland, going to Ireland.
I think this is something we need to explore more. I think it's we've been so focused on the new and what's happening here that it hasn't almost given us enough chance to explore its history and its past. And I think that's important. I wonder how we make that work. I think that's the most important thing for us, is telling the story in the right way and telling it in a way that makes sense for us and what we stand for.
But I know for myself that if I was working for you, the very first place I would want to go is to auger in and embed in Scotland and Ireland, the Highlands, you know, I mean, to contextually understand, you know, how it came about, because even in America in the early days, it's the same in the old country, is that there was no radio, there was no television. And so how did you communicate? How did you, you know, the storyteller?
It's so true.
It's just powerful stuff.
It is. And I think there's a really interesting, particularly in the UK, there's a really interesting relationship between folk music and country music. And we were talking about this the other day, weren't we, about the, not divide, but the way that it's categorized and the way that it's engaged with, because like you say, you know, country was completely influenced by those origins, but now when you look at folk music here in the UK compared with country, it's dealt with so differently.
I think country as a label has evolved very commercially and with that kind of focus. And I think country artists in the UK are appealing to what they view country in Nashville to be, like a modern country and stuff. Whereas with folk and kind of more rootsy stuff, that's still very much within the small communities that celebrate that and practice that, and it's less about the outward facing image of it and more about the community of it. And so in little villages where there's Morris dances, or you know, in the West Country where you'll find this little pub in Bath or something where they'll have music nights and people with all the old instruments will just come together, and it's not about promoting it, it's not about selling loads of tickets, it's about just being there with the people.
That sense of community.
Still, and still telling those stories. So I think that's where that divide has come from. Country now is more about the outward facing, in a way.
It's definitely, but I'd agree, that the folk side is definitely 100% a celebration of community. And it's wonderful in that regard.
And then there's another layer, the banjo, for example. That's an African instrument that first came to America directly from Africa.
Yeah.
You know, so to understand country music, the roots music in America, you ultimately have to go back to Africa.
That's exactly. 100%.
And it was interesting as well when we were at the Birthplace of Country Music Museum here in Bristol. We were discussing how in the early 20th century, well, kind of early to mid, it was actually the marketing people that created this divide and created this split between race records and hillbilly music, which, you know, and then that initial split then went on to create these two paths that seemingly are separated in a way, when actually at the heart of it, it's all one big thing, it's all one big journey. But from a marketing point of view, it created the split, which is really weird.
And it became more and more split. Like, if you go like 30 years later and you look at Ray Charles, you look at Solomon Burke, these are country artists, but they were categorized as soul, they were categorized as R&B, blues, and that's because of marketing.
But again, like you alluded to, in a societal context, 1927 is when the Bristol Sessions happened here. That was the apex of Ku Klux Klan in America, of ultimate racism and segregation. You know, so contextually, it makes perfect sense. And it's kind of tragic that it backfired the reality.
100%.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I think the way we engage with it today, it's important to recognize that and important to engage with that and ensure we tell it, like I said, tell the story as true as we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what we like to do from a modern perspective as well, is to give artists that other outlets maybe aren't so, not considerate of, but you know, they don't give as much time to or something, to tell the stories. And really, like, from the way we like to approach our articles and our interviews, is to just get to know the people rather than the kind of formulaic of just always about the new album, the new release. It's actually like, well, let's go into your backstory. Let's find out why you ended up doing this and how and what it meant to you, and to kind of see things from that perspective in a way.
What I love when I do interviews with musicians is I'm so curious, how did it start?
Yeah.
You know, when you're a little kid, you know, what first gave you that spark?
And because it's a commitment as well. You do it out of a love and enjoyment and a kind of talent that you might have. But also, it's a lot to dedicate your life to. You know, we've been speaking to people in our interviews as well this weekend where they're saying, you know, it's exhausting, this schedule, and it's obviously an amazing life to have, but it takes a lot as well, emotionally, in a way as well. So to find out the origins of why and how is interesting.
I tend to find artists appreciate that as well, to really, like you said, dig deep outside of just the album, the music, what it is at face value. It's like just digging deeper, finding out who this person is, what makes them tick, and then that be how that informs their music. I think it's, for us, it's all about the personality, it's all about who they are as people. And that's really important for us.
And one fascinating thematic thread that I observe, black or white or whatever, in America, in the country tradition, when you reel back in their lives, it consistently is, she was in the choir in elementary school. You know, it was psalms and it was singing things out of the Bible and whatnot. That's where they got their start. It's a stereotype, but it's true.
It is. We've seen many occasions where that is the case, that's where they started out, you know. In the town they came from, they started out in the church choir. Because there's such symbolism between gospel and country music. And I think for so many artists, it was just an effortless development into that style.
In the what if that I don't even want to say is, what if they had not? What if they had been churchless as kids?
Yeah.
You know, would they have ever got the bug? I would like to say probably not, maybe not.
I think that's the thing. I think it's different for everyone.
Sure, and but think about it. As a kid, you're so impressionable.
Completely.
And you're so wide open, receptive.
It's just interesting what you develop as a child.
An interesting thing about that from our perspective is that I think in the UK, there's far fewer kids and families are kind of grow up with the church at the heart of things.
When again, in UK, you have Church of England, you know, and it's so staid and so formal and so formulaic.
Completely.
You know, there's no dancing in the aisles.
No, exactly. And that's really interesting about how, as from a UK perspective, these things are brought about differently in people, or they're not grounded in that, or I don't know. It's an interesting kind of difference, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. I also don't make the correlation between faith and belief in the UK with music, really. I don't know about you.
Not as much,
but
so
I wouldn't make that correlation. And I think that's why I think there isn't. It's a quiet belief. It's a quiet sense mm-hmm. of credence. And I think here it's much more a celebration. Mm-hmm. It's a celebration of your belief, a celebration of your faith. Yeah. And
an extroverted one.
Yes, yeah. Completely. Yeah. Completely. It's almost like there's so much more of a, it's like quiet contemplation.
Yeah. Well, I suppose at the heart of it, that transcends it all, again, we come back to that just sense of community and the storytelling of
yeah,
it.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of whether that's based in a kind of practice of religion or just a family coming together, a community coming together, that's what unites it all, regardless of where you are. Mm-hmm. You know.
Before we go, looping back to Holler, mm-hmm. it is implicit that you came up with the name of the magazine paying homage to where we are.
100%. Right. 100%. It was originally, when the term was first come up with and the name was first come up with, it was originally going to be Holler and Stomp. Mm-hmm. And that quickly got shortened and much nicely quipped into Holler.
Yeah, no, I'm glad it got.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For us, the name Holler, there's a sense of real, I don't know, for me, I feel like you can just shout it. There's a real...
Again, exactly what I was thinking, because a holler, you're hollering at people.
That's it.
But then we know that it's the hollow.
The holler as well. Yeah. This is it. Yeah. And I think half of it, I'd say probably parts of it was certainly unintentional. Mm-hmm. But as the site's developed, it's become more true. Mm-hmm. It's become more... pertinent.
Mm. Talk to us about your editorial schedule, or you know, your what you on an ongoing basis, what you want to focus on.
Sure. I'll be completely honest, it's an interesting balance. Mm-hmm. We want to do things we do for the love, and then there's things we have to do simply to survive. Mm-hmm. And so we do have to engage with not necessarily clickbait content, but very much content that's easily accessible, things that people will get instant gratification from.
And get your attention.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
But then, while we do that, that means we are able to do these things we do for the love, mm-hmm. the long form features.
That's what I was going to ask. In your content, can you do long form?
We can. Mm-hmm. And that was from the start, mm-hmm. very much the intention. We both came from the sort of indie alternative scene where we wanted to offer long form, interesting and encompassing content.
And again, once again, the brilliance of digital.
It helps. It helps that you can just sort of write as much as you want, whether people read it or not, you can just put it out there.
Yeah, and you still can jump, you know, so you don't have to have 10 pages in a row.
That's it, exactly. And that's always been at the forefront of what we do. Mm-hmm. And I think that will always be an important part of what we do, regardless of where it goes, regardless of what sort of move we make next, whether it's into multimedia, whether it's focused in the world of social media, however we engage with our audience, the long form feature is who we are and it's where we tell our stories.
But you do multimedia within the magazine. You do video clips and whatnot.
We do, and it's something we're moving more into as well.
Mm-hmm. Creating our own of those things, like our own authentic kind of things of that. Like at the moment, we embed things that have already been created, but we want to branch out into making our own versions of those things, and you know, kind of creating them ourselves and putting our own spin, our own voice into them as well. Because I think our branding is strong and what we stand for is strong. So to be able to make that more accessible across different platforms is kind of what we want to do next.
Mm-hmm. Very, very cool. Do you guys ever dream or think about hosting an actual music performance?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I love that form as well. I think it's a really nice way of celebrating artists, and and we want to go,
you know what would be cool is to bring some of the people from the Holler over to Dublin, or 100%. Cork or whatever. That would be bringing it back home.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so well celebrated there as well. Mm-hmm. So it would make sense.
Somebody was talking the other day about Dublin just going viral over
this is
that
it.
Genre.
Yeah, and I literally just saw a video this morning of Garth Brooks crying while 90,000 Irish people sing back to him.
Well, wow. One of our Joff, he works for us. He's a staff writer. He's actually gone. He flew over from London to Dublin to see that gig. So I'm sure he's got a lot of stories to tell about that as well.
It's but no, definitely in terms of where we head and what we do next. Mm-hmm. Certainly, the live game interests us a lot. We like Kira and I have done that previously, and it's something that's always loved. I think and engaged with. Yeah. And being a performer, like being an artist, a musician yourself.
Yeah, that was always my favourite thing, to be honest, is just like the thrill you get from a good gig, from playing a good gig, and that kind of feeling of being there with everyone, and you're nervous and you do it, mm-hmm. and it's a feeling that I've never been able to experience from anything else in life. Other than being on stage and feeling the audience kind of being there with you.
But because they feed you, they fuel you.
It's
you
a very,
respond
like,
accordingly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a really, there's no other thing in life, I don't think I've found at least, that you're totally present. You're nowhere else. You're right there. You're with whatever your hands are doing on your instrument. Mm-hmm. You're with your voice and the microphone. It's just, you're nowhere else. And so that's why we do what we do, you know. That's why we write about it. That's why we celebrate it. That's why we promote it, because that's just what we love.
I love it. I could keep you guys all day, but I know they have plans for us in a few minutes. Before we go, to learn more about your world, where you direct somebody.
Sure. So you can find us on social media at Holler Country. We are at holler.country on the website.
Yeah, very easy.
Super simple.
Yeah, and we always would love to hear from people about what they would like to see us do as well. Mm-hmm. So if you do want to get in touch, please do.
Great.
And I'm Ross Jones, and I'm the editor of Holler.
And I'm Kira Baines, and I'm the assistant editor of Holler.
Awesome. And I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Bristol, Tennessee, and Virginia simultaneously. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer on KCBX Radio. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.